Welcome back to Gold Ribbon Conversations, the podcast created to support families fighting childhood cancer in Ireland. 6 children, adolescents and young adults are diagnosed with cancer every week in Ireland. And the Gold Ribbon, which illuminates precious light, love, courage and compassion, is a symbol of strength and solidarity for each and every one. My name is Sinead O'Moore, and it is my privilege to bring you this podcast on behalf of Childhood Cancer Ireland, a charity founded by and led by parents of children with cancer and survivors who know that one of the greatest sources of strength for this fight is conversation. Throughout this podcast, I talk to families impacted by childhood cancer, as well as the experts who care for our children's health, education and happiness. Yes, we talk about the fear and the pain, but we also talk about the hope and the friendship and the community that exists here, because you are not alone. Childhood Cancer Ireland values every single donation while on its mission to help more children, adolescents and young adults survive cancer and thrive as adults, and support all those dealing with the long-term effects of illness and trauma. Diagnosed at 10 with brain cancer, Dylan Smith Bresnahan is now 21 years old and has just finished second year in college, studying media production and digital art. His story is one of overcoming childhood cancer, of it not defining you, how it has taught him many lessons, connected him with many amazing people, charities and experiences, and we hope it can be a beacon of light for anyone on this journey. We talk about being diagnosed in Chicago while on holiday, the impact of childhood illness on education, having to advocate for yourself as cancer recovery doesn't end once the cancer is gone, and how his mindset is not just one of survival, but of living a full and wonderful life. Dylan, thank you so much for joining me on this episode. Of course, it is still May and we're talking about brain cancer as it is Brain Cancer Awareness Month. You are now 21 years old. You have just finished second year in college. You, as we said, have wonderful plans and ambitions to come in your life, which is such a moment of hope for so many families listening today. Take us back to when you were 10 and things were not as positive as they are today.
Hi, Sinead. So when I was 10, I was on holidays visiting my family over in America, in Chicago, and for a year kind of before this, I was getting headaches, and then kind of in the 2 weeks before I flew over there, I started vomiting, which was weird for me as a kid because I never really got sick when I was a kid at all. And I don't think I'd thrown up since I was a baby. So it was a big deal for me. And I started getting sick, but the doctor had cleared me to fly over to the States anyway. And I was really excited because I had a lot of fun the year prior when I was over there. So I was really excited to go over and everything like that. And I was staying with my dad over there and I was getting sick, and we went to the doctor. He brought me to the doctor, and the doctor said, "Oh well, it shouldn't be. It doesn't look like it's anything serious. It should pass. But if it's still something serious, we'll send you for a brain scan." So this was like a Friday or a Thursday, and they said, "We'll send you for a brain scan on next Monday if it is something. You know, if it continues, but it should pass by then." And I think it was the Saturday or the Sunday. I was getting worse pretty much. My dad was like, this is ridiculous. We can't wait till Monday. And he brought me to late at night or early in the morning or whatever. And he brought me to the emergency room, and they straight away gave me a CAT scan, and I didn't really know what was going on because I was 10. And also they weren't really telling me anything, and it was all very fast. But basically next thing you know, I was in an ambulance, and I remember thinking like, oh, this is deadly. I've never been in an ambulance before. Then they sent me to Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago, and I had a brain surgery there, and I kind of didn't really know what was going on, until kind of a few days after I had surgery. And they basically told me I had cancer, had a brain tumor, and they removed it all, thank God. But I had a brain tumor there, and then I spent another while there because they had a lot of brain pressure kind of issues and stuff like that. And then I went on to do radiation, proton radiation in Illinois as well, before coming home to Crumlin to do chemotherapy.
That's a lot for a 10-year-old who thinks he's going to America for the summer to spend time with his dad. Like that, it's a real sliding doors moment.
Rubbish holiday, to be honest, you know.
Yeah. But as well for your family.
Oh, yeah, you know, it was completely like for my mom and for my grandparents. Then came over while I was in hospital, and for a bit while I was in radiation as well. And some of my mom's friends came over to support as well. And it was a big shock for everyone over here, like, especially because I wasn't here, you know. So I was across the sea across the ocean for a big part of that as well. And so people were, you know, didn't see me and were worried about, you know, it's probably a lot more worrying when you can't see the person, I think, as well.
As a 10-year-old, did you have any understanding of you have cancer?
No, like I thought it was kind of like I had family members who have had cancer and stuff like that, but I kind of never really thought about it like as something that could happen to me. Like, I don't know, you kind of when you're 10 as well, you kind of think, oh, you know, bad things happen to like people on TV and like, you know, like my distant relatives, but they don't happen to like people I know or me, like, you know, kind of, you know, the kind of ignorance. Whereas when it happens to you, it's like surreal, you know, and it's like, why, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was a huge, obviously a huge shock, completely. And but in a way as well, it kind of like, it's kind of maturing in a weird way, like in a weird, like obviously in a very negative way, but in a way where it's like, oh wow, this is like the real world. Like, wow, okay.
You learned a lot about life really young and really quickly. In ways that many of us don't kind of switch on to until we're, you know, we might meet health challenges much later in life. And it's too late then to live differently because of it, to live maybe in a more appreciative way for what we have. Tell me, how was it like in hospital over there where, you know, you're out of your surroundings, you're out of your comfort zone, the people that, you know, you see on a daily basis here can't access you and you feel, you know, scared?
On the one end, it was really scary. Because obviously I didn't have any friends over here or over there. I didn't have any, like, just my mom and my dad, and my brothers were over there as well, and that was kind of it. And obviously my grandparents came over to see me as well, which was nice. But it was, but on the other hand, there was a few things where, like, the hospital over there was really nice, like, as in the food was really, they had a proper kitchen and all. It was really lovely, and you could order your food and all that kind of thing. So, and there was telly and stuff, so like it was a cool, like, system and all. So as a 10-year-old, you're like entertained. But also my friends over here were really good. While I was in hospital and while I was in treatment as well, while I was in while I was getting radiation as well, at like the primary school, and school came back, sent me over like sent me loads of cards, stuff like that. And when I was over there, like, my friends were sending me photos from back home and stuff like that. So it was I had a lot of support from back home, even though I was all the way over there without anyone. Without any of them.
Tell me about the years kind of thereafter, I suppose, because in this episode, talking to you, what's so important is to get the perspective of somebody who had the diagnosis in childhood and who has lived the last 11 years living with the fact that they had that diagnosis, living with the fact that they had to have, you know, very invasive surgery and extensive treatment in order to save your life, and the lessons that you've learned along the way.
Well, I think the really important one, and he said this to me before as well, is that, like, you can't let it, I mean, it did happen to me and I accept it happened to me, but it's different. You have to kind of embrace it, but not let it completely, like, ruin your life or define it so much as possible. Obviously, the things, like, I'm fairly lucky in my outcomes afterwards, but, you know, for the most part, to, like, try to not let it like ruin your life and like define you. Because it's, I see it a lot where it's kind of, it's, you know, 10 years later, people are still like, why me? And that's the wrong approach, because it's, you survived, it's a gift. So instead of just surviving, you should live, you know?
How do you choose to do that? How are there days where, maybe not now, but maybe in the beginning, it was hard to find that spirit?
Oh, for, well, especially when, like, when I was younger, it was really hard, because like I'm not led, I was really into playing GAA and stuff like that. I was really into sports when I was a kid, and then after my brain surgery, I wasn't led to play combat sports anymore, which is pretty much most sports. So I found it really hard in the beginning to adjust to that. And obviously there is adjustments people have to make after that, and it's hard, you know. And but I found, there's other things that I really enjoyed doing before I was sick, like art and stuff like that, that I found where I was able to lean more into that kind of thing afterwards, because I had no other option, and I was able to make friends through that, through my other interests, through comic books and through gaming and through all my other interests that I had before I was sick. So just because I lost that doesn't mean I'd had nothing. And I think as well, as really helpful and important was while I was sick, and kind of after I was sick as well, I had play therapy, which is really good for as a distraction from what was going on in my life, as well as a way to recover, but also as like in Crumlin, if you weren't in isolation, you did play therapy with other kids as well, which is great, because you met other people. And same with those other support groups I had, like I went to Bardstown all the time every year, which was, I think I did a total of like 10 or 11 Bardstown camps, like something crazy like that. And as well, Canteen as well, we're really good for as a support group for meeting, and in a way where like sometimes we'd address what happened to us, but a lot of time we wouldn't. A lot of time it would just be a group of people who, you know, would just be like going to any no-name club or anything like that, you know, where it was, you know, cancer wasn't really like the big, you know, we were just kids, like, you know, or just teenagers or whatever, you know.
Which is hard enough in itself to be a teen and to be finding out who you are and to be finding your little tribe and, you know, trying to show your individuality yet kind of fit in. You know, it's a rocky time. How did you, something that we talk about a lot is the fatigue that's involved, and that can be long standing after treatment. And, you know, seeing, I suppose, some of your peers having more energy.
Even still now, yeah. Like I skateboard, I mean, my mates all skateboard still. And even then, like, yeah, I wouldn't be able to skate for as long or as, you know, as hard as my friends or anything like that. But always, yeah, that is a challenge. And but I think if you have, like, I've like quite good friends, and if you have, like, you know, your friends generally will understand. And if they won't, even if they might, you know, one of them will stay back with you, or one of them will, or they'll go a bit easier if they know, you know, what you're going through. Because a lot of times, though, people don't get, like, because you're better, you know, you look better, whatever. They don't get that there's on, like, obviously, the side effects of cancer are themselves are nearly, or cancer treatment are nearly like a chronic illness in themselves. Like, you know, they're quite, so a lot of people don't get that. So a lot of people don't understand that, like, after, you know, after your treatment, you're still gonna, you know, years after your treatment, you're still not gonna feel 100%. You're not gonna feel like, you're probably never gonna feel like you did before. I don't think I'm ever gonna feel like I did when I was 9, you know. but that being said, if you say it to your mates will, your friends are, you know, if they're your friends, they'll understand, you know, they won't mind.
Tell me about what those symptoms are. What are the things that you deal with and have dealt with over the last number of years?
Well, for me, a big one is, as kind of you kind of said already, is like chronic kind of fatigue. Like, it's like I get really tired, and I kind of myself, and it's probably not a good thing, but I kind of live on caffeine, it's because I just constantly get really, really tired. I think I don't even know if that's from the chemo or what that's exactly from, but it's yeah. And I found it really hard in school, especially in secondary school. I feel like to cope with that, and to have in my college now, is my university's been really good at helping me manage that. And not so much in terms of like deadlines and projects and stuff like that. They've been really good. I've been able to get extensions and stuff like that, because I've just, you know, After a few hours of college a day, coming home, you know, you want to go to bed. So that's kind of the main big one. And there's kind of other smaller ones, like for me, but I think they're more brain tumor specific, where like I have not concentration, but I have a hard time sometimes understanding things, in the sense that I need people to slow down or say it again. So slow down or say it again, because I might not get things the first time.
Which is totally normal when you're feeling tired anyway. I think that can happen to many people.
And it's reinforced by that, by the fatigue then as well, that it's quite, so they kind of add up on each other as well. Yeah.
So going through your education, obviously you have such ambitions, and thankfully you've lent into a degree course that is involved in kind of creativity and arts, because you discovered that in yourself. Did you feel like speaking to the college, speaking to the lecturers, explaining your situation, talking to people means that it's possible for you to be supported through it?
I think so. And I think the more you engage with it, the better the support is, because like if you just say it to the disability officer, and in fairness, in Tala, in my university, that she actually said, the disability officer actually said it to me, that if you say this to your lecturers instead of me saying it, it's going to come across a lot better. And if you engage it yourself with the lecturers have a face, because if your disability officer goes, you know, Dylan has these issues, the disability officer is going to be going, oh, who's Dylan? The lecturer is going to be going, oh, who's Dylan? Like, who's this person? Whereas if you go up to the lecturer and say, sorry, at the end of your first lecture, or at the start of your first lecture, depending on, you know, how, you know, your the situation or whatever, and the scenario, and you go up to them and say, I've got these like problems, and you know, if you could do this, this would be deadly, if to help me out. Like all of them are gonna respond, like, if they're in most lectures anyway, if they're good, will respond with that, with, you know, positively, that, and they'll thank you for letting them know, and they'll do their best to help you out when they can, you know, because as well, like, especially in college more so than I think in secondary school, lecturers want to, you know, they want their students to do well. Like, they want, you know, they're not trying to catch it out. Like, you know what I mean? That's not their job. You know what I mean?
Did you feel in school missing a lot of time was hard to kind of catch up? Because that's something that definitely, from talking to parents on this podcast, there's, you know, they understand it. And then there might be kind of a future concern around, oh, so much school was missed. Will there be pressure to catch up? How will they reintegrate into the curriculum? And of course, school takes a backseat, you know, but the integration back into friendship groups. And we learned last season from talking to the principal in the school in Crumlin Hospital, how important it is for children to stay connected with education, not for the grades, but for the feeling like, I'm also learning because I have such a wonderful future ahead.
Yeah. It is really tough. Like, I missed all of fifth class, and then I came back to school for sixth class, but I missed a lot of class. And then all the way until, like, say, second year or maybe even third year of secondary school, I missed, like, quite a lot of school as well, just with fatigue, and then also other kind of feeling unwell, and then as well just hospital appointments. Like, I had quite a lot of hospital appointments for the few years after. I was actually funny when I was in fifth class, because I was worried about missing school, because it was summer when I was diagnosed, you know. In the August kind of before, I one of my uncles had brought me over a maths book. And I did the whole thing in August, because it was one of those ones, it was like a workbook, you know, you could do it. So I did the whole thing in the August. So then when I came back to school in fifth class, like, a few times, every now and then when I was feeling up to it. And the teacher would be like, oh, open your maths book to this page and do this. And I'd have it done and I feel great. But it's really tough. And there's no, it's really important to try and keep up, I guess. But it's also hard, like, because, you know, especially, not only do if you're a kid, you kind of don't want to be in school when you're not in school, But also, like, if you're feeling like if you're doing chemo or whatever, like you like, or you're doing whatever, the last thing you want to do is, you know, open a maths book, you know. But it is tough. It is really tough, and I think it's something. I don't know how schools could be supportive, and maybe other schools are more. I know my secondary school was kind of abysmal, so it's tough like that. Yeah,
I'm really disappointed to hear that that was your experience.
Oh, my secondary school wasn't the most. Some of the staff in the school themselves were, but the school as a whole definitely weren't very, for me anyway, very good at the support thing. But it was
hard because, you know, you're, as you said, you're running on fatigue. You're trying your best. You've done your whole maths book. Do you feel like you've had times in your life where you've really had to advocate for yourself?
It's especially really hard in secondary school. Really, really hard in secondary school, where it was other than kind of the SNAs there and the support staff, there was really no one really seemed like to care or to try. Like, even I had a hearing device, and I used to get in trouble for not wearing the hearing device. But at the start of all my classes, I would give it to the teacher, and the teacher, instead of wearing it around their neck, they would put it on the desk. And I'd ask them, like, oh, no, you have to wear that for it to work, to connect to my hearing aids. And they just wouldn't. And then when it would come to parent-teacher meetings, they'd go, oh, Dylan's not wearing it.
That's so disappointing. And did your parents or guardians have to...
Well, when you're 14, it's like your word against, you know, six teachers, you know, so it's like... I was very funny when I did my PLC in Liberty's College in Dublin. It was mostly during Zoom because it was during COVID, but they were all really good at all the supports I needed and everything. I thought they were really good at giving it. It was the first time where, like, in my life where they'd just been, you know, there was no questions, there was no, they just, you know, they just did it, you know. And I was like, oh, thank you very much, thank you. They're like, why are you thanking me? Like, it's my job. And that was the first time it got to hit me, like, how bad it was in secondary school. Because I knew it was bad when I was there, but I didn't realize it was, you know. And then when that happened, I was like, when they were so good in college, I was like, oh, wow, like, this is how it's supposed to work. Like, you know.
Childhood Cancer Ireland empowers parents and young people by providing workshops and training sessions, which help you to find and use your voice. Sharing your story is a reminder to you and others that you are not alone. Every story is different, and telling yours can be a powerful tool in helping you to have your voice heard, help others to understand your experience, and even to bring about change. Our workshops for parents and young people focus on enabling you to communicate your story and to have your voice heard in a meaningful way. For more information on these free workshops, visit childhoodcancer.ie. To help us to continue our services, please text GOLD to 50300 and donate €4, or visit childhoodcancer.ie for more.
Tell me about, you mentioned at the start that you had to grow up quite quickly, but that it taught you things that many of us might not know. Tell me more about what those things are.
The main thing I kind of realized then is that, like, and I've learned this, unfortunately, had to learn this more and more through losing friends and stuff to cancer and stuff like that, is that life is short. Like, and there's no point, like, well, once you've got through this, there's no point in looking back on it and focusing on it. And you know, you have to move forward. And I think it's really important to, I've said this already, but, like, instead of just kind of being a cancer survivor, you know, it's kind of about, like, living after you've had cancer. Because I think it's like, and I've been really lucky, and I guess I know everyone's a different, you know, financial situation like that, things like that as well. But I've been really lucky in that I've got to do a lot since I've survived. And I've got to live, like, a pretty good life so far since, you know, since I've been sick. Hopefully going to third year college now. Like, my results haven't come out yet, but, you know, I'm in finished second year of college, and I'm doing my dream course, and you know, I've been on some cool holidays, and I've, you know, got to meet some cool people, and you know, it just did that, not that if I had, you know, and a lot of times if I had been, instead of, if I just focused on what happened to me when I was 10, instead of looking at what's going to happen to me when I'm 22, like, you know, I would be in a very different place, you know what I mean? A very different place mentally as well, because I'd, you know, I'd probably be still, like, upset, you know what I mean? Instead of being happy that I'm here to do stuff.
Have you had help with changing that mindset? Have you had support groups? I know you've mentioned Canteen, which we've spoken before on the podcast about, and Bardstown, but have you engaged in kind of talk therapy about it?
In Crumlin, actually, I had a psychologist, and at the time I didn't really realize what that was doing, because I wasn't really, it wasn't very, like, it wasn't intense, or it was just someone to talk to. But I went to psychologist for a few years, like, after, until I was, I think until I was 16, or, and then I saw them once or twice then after that, you know, kind of, but I went regularly until I was kind of 16 or 15. And I hadn't realized kind of that was doing that, but that's why probably was kind of, you know, subconsciously helping me there. And I think as well, again, I know I've already mentioned Canteen and Bardstown, but I think having that distraction as well, and having a, as well as that, like, Bardstown and Canteen, or especially Bardstown, are, and it's kind of a terrible way to look at it, but they are opportunities you get because you are either not, I don't want to say rewards, because that's not a good way to put it, but they are opportunities that you avail of because you've been a fighter, because you've something horrible's happened to you, and this is kind of your comeuppance for this horrible thing that's happened to you. You know, this is kind of your payback, is getting to go to Bardstown, or getting, you know, or getting your Make-A-Wish, or getting your whatever. So I think they're really good tools and help and ways to help with that kind of mindset.
And for parents listening who might have a 10-year-old or 11 or 12 who dream of a very happy and healthy 21-year-old to look forward to in the future, but want to support their child, want to help their child through this, and don't really know how, because they too are in a state of fear and stress and trauma. What would you say might help them to kind of support their child into seeing that there is so much ahead?
Well, I want to preface this by saying I'm not a parent, and I don't want to be giving parenting advice, but
you are a child who has gone through it.
But I think making sure those opportunities are available to the kid, and making sure the kid knows that they can go to Bardstown, and knows that they can, you know, or if they're over 12, knows that they can, you know, there's a support group, the Canteen's out there for them, and that, you know, and stuff like that. But also, like, I think nurturing their other interests, rather, even, like, I know there's some, obviously, depending on your illness, some kids do get to play sports after they're sick, and obviously if they're really into GAA and they're able to play GAA, let them indulge in that, like, let them indulge in their other, because I think that the best way to get over it is to not forget about it, but to be distracted by it, and then it won't be a big deal. That, especially if you've come out the other side of it, you know, it won't be a big deal if you have, you know, kind of other things going on in your life. Because I think a lot of the time what happens is with people who do kind of go, why me all this time? And then when COVID happened, I know a few of my friends were like, well, this is terrible, I've already been through something horrible, why do I have to go through something else horrible? I think if they had something like else, you know, going, you know, something else to distract them, or something else, just another interest, they indulge in their other interests more, or other hobbies more, they'd be able to look at life for what it is, which is, you know, a series of opportunities, rather than kind of what's happened to their past circumstances.
I love that. It's a series of opportunities. It's a really nice way of looking at it.
Just made that up just there on the spot.
That needs to go on a t-shirt. But it's about seeing those opportunities, and it's about not limiting. Yeah, and look, I am a parent, and I would assume that what I would do is just wrap my child up in complete cotton wool and try to limit those opportunities, because I want to keep them safe. But I know that that's not the right approach.
Well, there's a limit to that as well. If they're there's a certain point where, like, you know, if they want to go mountain biking, you know, make them wear a helmet, like, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of, But you know, don't obviously there's a limit to that, like, as well. But you know, I mean, like, I think that's another thing as well. I think, like, sometimes keeping them inside, away from their friends, even though I know depends obviously as well if they're need to be in isolation, they need to be in isolation. That's obviously, don't ignore medical advice. Sorry, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying, like, there is obviously a tendency to overprotect your child, and especially because they've been through that and they've, you know, and you know, it's a hard time and stuff. So I get that, but there's a point where you've got to help them like grow past it as well, you know,
and to become the people that they want to be.
Exactly,
you know, not just the child that had cancer, but the person that you are.
Exactly, because you're so much more than that. Like, I'm so much more than someone who had cancer when they were 10. And like, I was really unfortunate in that I was picked on after I got sick in secondary school for being sick, which is kind of terrible. But, and so I've had to kind of become own more than I'd like to own that I had cancer, and kind of, it's been harder for me to forget about it because of that. But at the same time, I can own that I had cancer and be the chemo kid and everything like that, and still, you know, do other stuff and still be cool with it, you know. And everyone's, you know, everyone needs help. Like, it's not easy. Like, so no one really, you know, it's not at all. Like, at least in my case, it's been very like, yeah, it's been fine. People have helped me out. I don't need help, but I've been able to help other people out, thank God. So it's not been, you know, no one's had any kind of issue or any, you know, at all. Like, so it's been fine, yeah.
But I mean, like, so you can kind of, when people mature, you can connect with people who you are now. And everybody has a past. Something has happened to everybody along the way. But college is a great place for adults meeting adults and leaving a little part of childhood behind.
Yes, I agree. As well, because a lot of the time as well, like, if you're going to go into secondary school, most of the people, a lot of them would have been primary school with you and stuff like that as well. So they'd know you for forever. Whereas in college, you're like, there's a few people I went to secondary school with in college, but for the most part, it's like, you know, people are, and they're not going to look at you the same way they did in secondary school either, because they're 20 now, you know. And people in college didn't know you when you were five or when you were 15 or whatever. So they don't have any, you know, notions about you at all. So it's yeah, you're right. It's a new space for adults to meet adults, and it's great.
And you are doing your part in helping others by sharing your story on this podcast. And that's what it's about, you know. Once you become an adult, you realize that there's others going through stuff. And what we need is people to champion challenge and, you know, see what you've gone through as a massive part of something that needs to be celebrated, for everything that you fought, for everything that you had to overcome, you know, that you are a fighter. That, like, is something that needs to be, yeah, really praised and applauded for what you've gone through. And thank you for sharing what you've gone through on this podcast, because the reason that the podcast exists is to share these stories of what really happens. And I think it's a real privilege to be able to talk to those that have gone through it. We talk to a lot on the podcast about to the experts or to the parents, but to really talk to somebody, and I've had a few episodes now between you and Carl and Nikki Bradley and a few others, and they've just been, it really is, they're some of the most powerful ones, because this happened to you.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
And to hear your experience of it, and not just from a medical and physical, but how, you know, what happened emotionally and the longer term impacts of how you now live with what happened to you, because it was to you.
Yeah, yeah.
So it really is wonderful to talk to you, because people that are going through it need your voices, not just the voices of the experts and not just the voices of the parents, but really to connect with people that they can be inspired by and look up to and look forward to a life similar to yours. Thank you for the work that you're doing, and thank you for joining me on the podcast to share your experience and no doubt pass back some of that hope and that mindset that you have, you've done amazing to create.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure being on the podcast. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Gold Ribbon Conversation. There are more Gold Ribbon stories written by those fighting childhood cancer on our website, childhoodcancer.ie, and you'll find a link in our show notes. If you can, we would love you to share this podcast across social media using hashtag Gold Ribbon Conversations, as it can help more families to discover this show. This podcast was produced by The Brand Story for Childhood Cancer Ireland, hosted by Sinead O'Moore, and sound production by Alan Breslin.